Tree Committee to order. It is 1 p.m. It is Friday, January 26, 2018. Before we begin, I want to thank Butch Carber, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our proceedings, and Max Stanley from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Eastman, Representative Kopp, Representative Millett, who is here as a alternate, Representative Ledoux, and myself, Representative Clayman. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is House Bill 216, Transfers from Dividend Fund Crimes, sponsored by Representative Kopp. This is the third hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. At this time, we will resume amendments to House Bill 216. But before I do, I want to again repeat on the record that Legislative Legal has permission to make any technical and conforming amendments to the bill based on the amendments we may or may not adopt. To provide a brief recap, and I would note that Representative Christ Tompkins has joined us. To provide a brief recap, on Wednesday, the committee considered amendments 1 through 5. We adopted amendments 1 through 4, and when we recessed amendment number 5, it was still under consideration. As part of the discussion on amendment number 5, we distributed the alleged legal memo that had been sent to Representative Eastman that discusses some of the issues raised by amendment number 5. And I would just note, before we go to more discussion, Representative Eastman, do you still want to proceed with amendment 5?
Yes.
Okay. So is there more discussion as to amendment number 5? Representative Eastman, you're going to get a wind-up. So let's see if anybody else has comments before you get the last word. I see no one else. I will just make note my comments as chair in reviewing the memo that Representative Eastman received from Ledge Legal. In the last paragraph, I read the last paragraph as essentially saying if we adopt this amendment, we're going down a path that is unpredictable and uncertain where it would take us, and so I won't be supporting amendment number 5. Representative Eastman, you have the last word. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the purpose of the amendment is to have discussion. So I wish there had been more discussion than this. But it seems to me, on a straightforward reading of the bill, which is also reflects a lot of what we already have in current statute, if they had been eligible, doesn't seem to me what we're asking the department to do. Because we're not asking the department to determine whether or not they were in fact eligible. There's a process that they use, and they assume a degree of eligibility. And so my thought would be, perhaps what we really want the department to do is to assume that they had been eligible. So they're rendered ineligible by virtue of incarceration or conviction, and then there's an assumption, which there already is, that they had been eligible. So if they had been eligible, would have changed to something like assuming they had been eligible. I think that would be more in line with what we're seeing as far as actual practice, which what I think the committee and legislature is a practice that we want them to continue. So
thank you very much, Representative Eastman.
So with that, I would like to withdraw the amendment, simply so that is that really 3 minutes?
Representative Eastman, you don't need to say any more. Amendment number 5 is withdrawn. Thank you very much. That brings back before the committee House Bill 216. And this is an opportunity for closing discussions as to 216. Representative Millett, I know you haven't spent as much time with us as some, but we actually put time limits on comments, and so it's 3 minutes per member. And since this is Representative Kopp's bill, he's going to get the last word. So I won't call on him, but I'll give him the last chance. Anyone that would like to comment on House Bill 216 before we decide what to do with it? Seeing hear nothing. Representative Kopp, just get the last word.
Representative Clayman, thank you for hearing this bill, and I just want to thank the committee for their support in advancing what I think is one of the most important victims' rights pieces of legislation that we have on the table before us this session. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. Representative Christ Tompkins, may I have a motion?
Yes, I move version 30-LS0572/T of House Bill 216 as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection to moving it out of committee?
I would object.
What's that?
I would object, yes.
If you would call the roll, Mr. Clerk.
Can we have discussion?
No.
Isn't it normally the case where we would have discussion for the bill itself, not just an amendment?
Eastman, you had the opportunity to take it up just a few minutes ago, and you chose not to. So, no, there's no further discussion now. If you could call the roll, please.
Representative Reinbold.
That would be Representative Millett.
Representative Millett.
Yes.
Representative Kopp.
Yes.
Representative Christ-Tompkins.
Yes.
Representative Ledoux.
Yes.
Representative Fansler.
Not present.
Representative Eastman.
Yes.
I'm sorry?
Representative, he said yes.
Representative Stutes. Chair Klayman.
Yes.
6 yeas.
So by a vote of 6 yeas and 0 nays, House Bill 216 will move from this committee. If we will take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Back on record, our second and final order of business today is House Bill 13, No State Municipal Funds Federal Immigration Registry, sponsored by Representative Josephson. This is the second hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. The committee members will remember that we first heard this bill in April of last year. We heard the bill, we had public testimony, we closed public testimony, and so today we will have a brief overview of the bill, and then we will move on to discussion. Here to introduce the bill and discuss it, or not introduce, but reintroduce the bill, is the staff of Representative Josephson, Megan Holland. If you could identify yourself for the record, and you can begin your presentation.
Chairman Klayman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Megan Holland. I'm staff to Representative Josephson. He, unfortunately, is unavailable at this moment as he is co-chairing resources. As the chairman just stated, I am going to very briefly sort of refresh our memories as to what House Bill 13 is, what it does, and also kind of touch on a bit of the discussion that we already had, the issues that already came up in what we previously discussed. So you do have a new CS before you. Is that the working document at this moment?
Is that not
adopted yet? I don't think that was.
I don't think we have the CS. Maybe we do need to make a motion to adopt the CS.
There is a CS.
There's a CS now, but it wasn't before us in April. Okay, so actually, Representative Christ-Tompkins, could I have a motion to adopt the committee substitute?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'll make the motion to adopt a CS version for House Bill 13, version 30-LS0147-R is our working document.
Hearing no objection, we are now moving forward with the committee substitute. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I'll continue. This new CS only has one change from the previous version, and it's a conforming change. Last year, there was a statute that was referred to in this bill that was repealed, so we had our drafter remove that repealed statutory reference. I did speak with the drafter as to the implications of this change, and she told me that it does not affect a substantial change upon the bill. So,
can you tell us a little bit more? I know we actually have some exchange students that were here at the House floor session, and they might be interested to hear a little bit more about the bill. If you could briefly describe it, if for no one else, at least for our exchange students in the audience.
Through the chair, yes. I believe the next slide. I'll just continue on because I believe I will cover that briefly. So House Bill 15 prevents municipal and state governments from using or authorizing use of their assets to implement or help implement a presidential order, federal regulation, or law which creates a registry based on race, religion, ethnicity, or national origin. What this bill does is it proactively prevents federal overreach and protects privacy of Alaskans and could also potentially save the state money. So this is a sort of proactive solution to a problem that does not currently exist at this moment, but such registries have existed in the past, and it is the sponsor's belief that these rights to privacy and equal protection under the law should be protected. Okay. Moving on.
So that gets. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead and finish your presentation, and then we'll get to questions.
Okay. Some things we covered in previous hearings that I'm just going to touch on very briefly. Refresh your memories. We determined through ledge research that House Bill 13 does not affect state registries. This bill has very few words, and the words that are in it are very important. For example, based on and registry are two very key terms here. For example, the U.S. Census compiles data based on ethnicity of U.S. citizens every year, but it is not a registry because it takes that data and then compiles it into an aggregated form. So it is not a registry, and it is also not based on ethnicity due to the fact that they are compiling this data for the purpose of counting the population and age and children, etc. So what House Bill 13 doesn't do is affect institutions which collect aggregated data in this sense. It also does not impair the Department of State's capability to track terrorist organizations. They currently track the comings and goings of people from every country, every national origin, and so creating an additional registry was determined redundant by the Department of this Homeland Security. The bill sponsor introduced this bill after hearing some statements from the federal administration that implied that there was significant interest in reviving such a registry based on religion or national origin. So he felt it was a pressing issue for the state legislature to respond to those claims. He also introduced it because our state has enacted a proactive measure such as this before in regard to the individual right to bear firearms, as you will see in the bill in Section 1. And it also makes a statement that Alaska will not participate in any forms of federal overreach, especially when it is concerning to our liberties. With that, I am available to answer any questions that you may have.
Representative Ledoux.
So you say that it potentially could save money. If the federal government decides that we're not cooperating, though, it could use as an incentive or a hammer that we lose federal money. Is that correct also?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that is correct. If this bill were to be considered a sanctuary policy, we would know, according to a recent executive order, we would no longer be qualified to receive certain grants from the Department of State and Homeland Security. However, there was a fairly similar bill that passed in Vermont this past year or so, and that was actually ruled not to be a sanctuary policy. So really, whether or not this bill would save the state funds hinges upon whether or not it is considered a sanctuary policy. I have spoken with NCSL and reviewed similar legislation to try and determine a yes or no answer to that question. Is this bill a sanctuary policy? And unfortunately, I was not able to get a yes or no answer. The clearest answer that I can give you is that it could be argued in court that this is a sanctuary policy. We can't know for sure right now at this moment, but I have seen similar legislation determined to not be a sanctuary policy, meaning we would not be violating that specific statute, meaning that we would not lose out on those funds. So I apologize that I can't give a more clear answer than that.
No problem. Can I just have a follow-up?
Absolutely. Follow-up.
So lately I've been looking at fiscal notes a little bit. And so
we think it's your new hobby.
Yeah, it's my hobby now. So it would seem to me when we're saying that a bill can potentially save money or possibly lose money, that it's probably more appropriate to give a bill an indeterminate fiscal notice. I'm wondering if there's anybody from the administration who might care to speak about that.
Let me look and see if anybody...
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I don't have anyone from the administration online right now to address that. But as to the possible savings of this bill, it would come from the state not participating in a federally mandated registry. So we wouldn't be putting our state resources towards that.
So...
Follow-up?
I guess it's not really a question. One more question.
Go ahead, Representative.
So, what about a registry? I mean, would this preclude the state from helping out the federal government if it were just to want to list everybody who came in who had non-citizenship status? I mean, that wouldn't be based upon race, religion, national origin, but would be based upon citizenship, the federal government wanting to keep track of, you know, people who are coming and going from this country.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, you make a fine observation, and that is that immigration status is actually not included under this list of registries which the state will not participate in. National origin, although it is closely tied to immigration status, is actually not the same thing. The federal government does currently, it already tracks everyone who comes in and out of this country. They've been improving that process for years, and this bill would not affect that. They would continue to track that.
Thank you.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. So along the lines of Representative Ledoux, are you familiar with any legislation like this that has been determined to be sanctuary legislation in any other states?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes. Yes, I have. I do have a document from NCSL that lists sanctuary legislation in other states. I don't know it off the top of my head. If I could have a moment to look at my notes, maybe I could.
Sure, if you want to take a minute and review, or for that matter, if you've got a communication from NCSL, if you want to copy that, we can take a brief recess and circulate that.
Through the chair, if I may read a quote from NCSL.
Sure, go ahead.
At least 36 states and the District of Columbia considered legislation in 2017 regarding sanctuary jurisdictions or noncompliance with immigration detainers. Of these states, 33 states would prohibit sanctuary policies, and 15 states and the District of Columbia would support. 12 states have legislation on both sides of the issue. And to add to that, I don't know if that answers your question, Representative Stutes.
I guess it's close enough. Thank you.
You could probably figure with some certainty that California is one that wants to protect folks that want to claim sanctuary status. But beyond that, we don't want to predict what the other states might be doing. Follow-up, Representative Stutes?
Yes, I do have a follow-up. So are you familiar enough with the legislation in the other states that have been determined to have sanctuary legislation to know whether or not their legislation is reflective of this current legislation proposed by Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, I have looked at that legislation. I apologize, but I do not have a list of it with me right now, and I think this is a great opportunity for an I don't know answer. As I previously stated, I did see that there was a fairly similar bill. So the Vermont bill that I keep referring to says that the state government will not give information or personal individual data to the federal government when if they mandated, if they asked for that data. And that is what the bill that was not, that was determined to not be a sanctuary policy. They are all very different, and I would have to get back to you to get you a clear answer on that question, Representative Stutes.
Just a quick follow-up so I'm clear. So you're not clear as to whether some of the other legislation that has been determined to be sanctuary-type legislation is reflective of Representative Josephson's. Am I correct?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, you are correct. I have spoken directly with NCSL to try and get a yes or no answer to that question, and they gave me a maybe. If anything, a very soft no. But I did not reach a clear answer to that question, and I believe it was due to the process of how we get to an answer. They told me that we wouldn't be able to determine that until it had been determined by the courts, and we can't really predict that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. I'm curious about the specific types of assets being referred to in this legislation. I know the title specifically calls out the expenditure of state or municipal assets. And I'm wondering, based on previous conversation earlier this week on another bill, what if a private party was to provide or donate assets? Would the bill as currently written preclude those assets being used for any of these reasons? I know in a earlier bill we have a private party that's donating money, and that's going to be used for doing things like creating signs or perhaps in this case creating registries.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, this bill is quite specific to address state and municipal assets, so I'm assuming in the lack of addressing private institutions that it would not affect those.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
So you keep talking about a Vermont case, sir, and said that it was determined that a bill similar to this would not be a sanctuary city bill. So I guess I'm wondering whether or not you've got a copy of that statute, and then I'm also wondering whether you have a copy of the Vermont decision, and finally I'd like to know whether that decision has been appealed or not.
That's three questions, but I bet you can answer all three.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I do not have a copy of that exact legislation on me. I would be happy to get it to you. What was the third question?
Good question. The second question was, do you have a copy of the court opinion, if it was a court opinion? And the third part is, if it was a court opinion, was it appealed?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I do not believe it has been appealed. I would also be happy to get you a copy of the court opinion. I have a summary of the bill right here on hand if you would like to hear that.
I will speak on behalf of, as committee chair, I think we would really want to see the bill itself because this is a committee we like the weeds. And we like to look at the exact language. A summary probably wouldn't give us the same analysis we'd get by putting the statutes side by side.
But
Representative Ledoux, you can follow up.
I would actually like, for starters, actually, if I could see the summary while you're in the process of getting the actual the bill for us.
Why don't we take a brief at ease, and we will get a copy of the summary to distribute to the committee. And then we've distributed the memo. Representative Ledoux, any follow-up after getting the memo?
No, I actually need to see the actual bill. But thank you.
Okay. Representative Eastman.
Yes, through the chair. Now, in the process of prohibiting the creation of these registries, I'm just curious. I know there's another bill currently in the legislature that, among other things, would require outreach to members what's the general way of saying it? Immigrant communities and those who are from outside of the United States to educate them on the topic of female genital mutilation. Would this bill make it harder for that outreach to occur?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, first I'd like to address something, and that is that this bill is prohibiting giving state assets to the implementation or the assistance in creating a federal registry. So the federal government could still create that. So it doesn't actually prohibit that from happening. It prohibits state participation. Secondly, I don't see how this bill would affect the outreach to any particular community. I don't believe creating an individual registry based on those things is necessary for that. I think we see plenty of examples of people doing such things without such a registry that this bill addresses.
A follow-up?
Representative Eastman.
Through the chair. So let me try and understand this. So we are saying with this bill that where the state can continue to maintain whatever registries the state maintains. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, yes, this bill specifically addresses federal mandates,
okay,
not state registries.
Follow-up.
Representative Eastman.
And so perhaps, you know, in the state's wisdom, it wants to reach out to communities or send information to people who might be affected by some of these criteria. So the state would continue to be able to do things the state wants to do, but would that in fact be the case if something the state wants to do, the federal government is also wanting us to do? You see the dilemma. If we are wanting, for our own reasons outside of the federal government, to identify individuals and reach out to them, but the federal government also wants us to do that, then my reading of the language here would be that we in fact are prohibited from doing that, not because we don't want to, but because the federal government's also joined us in wanting us to do it.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, is the bill drafter online? I believe I asked her to call in.
Ms. Martin is online. Hillary Martin, have you been listening?
Yeah, this is Hillary Martin with Legislative Legal Services. I'm sorry, I missed part of the question when they unmuted my phone.
So I think that they're calling for the Ledge Legal. They're calling on Ledge Legal for advice on this answer. If you could, I'll ask Representative Eastman to ask his question again, and you can answer it.
Certainly, and through the chair. So one of the things that we're saying in this bill is that we're not necessarily taking away from the state's ability to do its own registries and whatever things already exist to maintain them and so forth. But in the event that the state itself wanted to identify individuals and reach out to them or educate them or so forth based on some of these criteria, that we might be prohibited from being able to do that if it turns out, incidentally, that the federal government also wanted us to do that and express that through an order, regulation, or law, et cetera.
Ms. Martin.
And I think that the bill is talking about aiding the federal government, whether it's an order of the president or a federal reg or a law, in creating this type of registry. If the state is creating a registry based on its own needs or in carrying out the mandates of a state law, the fact that it might incidentally also be something the federal government collects would probably, the reason this would be, it would probably be okay because you're acting out of state law. The question is whether you're using state resources to implement a federal mandate. If you're doing something that's required by the state, that's a different situation.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
So if the state, for one reason or another, decided to create a registry, would this bill prohibit turning over that registry to the federal government? So I see that, the way I'm looking at it is that it wouldn't impair the state's ability to create a registry, but it would impact or prohibit turning over that registry to the feds. Am I reading that right?
Ms. Martin?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, I think it could prohibit that.
It could prohibit that, but not necessarily would prohibit it?
I think it would be a pretty fact-specific determination what exactly is going on if the... But I think if you're talking about, like, the federal government's like, we're going to create a registry based on the religion of, so we're every citizen, we're going to create this registry, and Alaska, give us this information you might have, I think this would prohibit that.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux, you look pensive.
Well, what I'm actually trying to get at is if for some reason the state wanted to create a registry, let's say that people from a certain area were having a health problem, and so they wanted to create a registry so that they could reach out to some group which had a health problem to educate them on that. And then the federal government says, oh, by the way, can we have the list? Would that prohibit the state from giving the list to the federal government?
Ms. Martin.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, I think it would depend on why the federal government wanted it. If they were using it to create a registry, then the state would be prohibited from doing that. If they were trying to get it for some other purpose, then it may not be prohibited.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Kopp, was that a hand or not a hand or an indeterminate? Indeterminate, yes. Is fine. I can go to Representative Eastman. Representative Kopp.
Just to, I think, flesh out where Representative Ledoux is getting at, this doesn't prohibit something based on a health care incident. It speaks of registries based on race, religion, ethnicity, or national origin. So if we had the 1912 Sarum Run to Nome, whatever year that was, and maybe they were, or we had an outbreak of polio maybe in a specific location, and they were trying to do a quarantine, make sure everybody that was in there at the time was vaccinated. This, I could see it maybe found justifiable under the healthcare thing that Representative Ledoux brought up. This is referring to, of course, much larger classes of race, religion, ethnicity, or national origin. And just in reading the bill on its plain view, it appears that there's nothing that inhibits the state from doing what it wants to do. It just may or may not be able to receive aid or help from the federal government in doing it if the federal government is also interested in the same thing in one of these protected categories.
Ms. Martin, you're not a representative. response to Representative Kopp's question.
I think that's correct. So the question is whether the federal government is using the information to create a registry based on race, religion, ethnicity, or national origin, and that would determine whether the state could use assets to assist the federal government in that.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Through the chair. Well, I can think of at least two different types of scenarios where the federal government might be involved in health issues related to things on this list. And certainly we do spend an awful lot of money on health research to very specific categories of people based on some of these list items, in fact. One, because health issues are often traced to genetic issues, which deal with issues of race and ethnicity, and then also different communities and ethnicities practice different habits, which impact health, which might impact public health. My question is on just in the way that this is written, I think we're spending a lot of weight on what based on means. And I was wanting to ask Ms. Martin if there's some fleshing out we could do on what exactly based on means. How is that going to be interpreted by the courts? And do we have some other examples of how that's been used?
Ms. Martin.
Representative Eastman, through the chair, I don't have any great specific answer for you about, you know, a court interpreting something like based on. What would happen is a state agency would be asked to provide information to the federal government. They would make a determination as to whether it is providing information that's used to create a registry based on these things, and a court would look at whether the agency's interpretation is reasonable. You know, certainly, though, if the committee wanted to clarify the bill, that's within the committee's power to make the language more clear.
Representative Kopp.
Question for Ms. Martin. Ms. Martin, would it be clarifying if on line 14 it said create a registry based solely on race, religion, ethnicity, or national origin? Would that more narrowly focus it so that if there were other factors that would introduce why race and the fact that someone comes out of maybe a very particular province, a very particular town, and a very particular group that the government may have a need of tracking, I'm just wondering if that would more narrowly define it from a legal definition if the word solely was introduced.
Ms. Martin.
Representative Kopp, through the chair, that would it would certainly narrow the reading, and if that's something the committee desires, that would clarify that it's only registries that are solely based on these things and not something that also happens to include this information.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't see any other questions, and I had a deadline. Go ahead, Representative Eastman.
Thank you.
Don't wait too long, or else I'll roll on.
Through the chair. Now, that's an interesting question just asked previously, and I might also want to ask, if we are prohibiting the creation of a registry based on one of these things, the operative language being or, it would seem to me that a very easy way to get around this limitation would simply be to have a registry which included other information alongside each of these, or even if it was a registry that was based on race, religion, ethnicity, and national origin, it would obviate the restriction on any one of these items individually. You see, by simply adding a little bit more information in this registry, I think we'd get around the intended limitation.
Ms. Martin? I know we're kind of in the midst of bill drafting by committee. Go ahead.
Representative Eastman, through the chair, I would say it's a matter of drafting. While and would mean both or all of them, or doesn't just mean one, like or often could be like race or religion or both. But I think certainly it's within the committee's power to change the language if they think it should be clarified.
All right. I don't see any other questions or comments. And we had a deadline of yesterday at 5 for amendments. But then since then, and I know we're in only the second week of session, I know that Representative Cobb has been having some discussions with Representative Josephson about a possible amendment. And since we are not racing down on the last days of session, what I'm going to do is hold this bill to give Representative Cobb and Representative Josephson an opportunity to discuss further whether or not there's going to be an amendment. So what we're going to do, we'll hold the bill. We will not take this up again until at the earliest. We may not take it up next Wednesday, but the earliest we'll take it up is next Wednesday. If there is going to be an amendment, I'd ask anyone that wants to offer an amendment, they have it in by 5 p.m. on Tuesday next week. And we will determine whether or not to bring this up on Wednesday as the bill's previously heard. But we're not going to take up any amendments today because we have no amendments. And we're not going to move the bill because I want to give a chance to consider potential amendments. And so with that, we will adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is scheduled for Monday, January 29th at 1:30 p.m. following the Judiciary Finance Subcommittee meeting. On Monday, we will be taking up House Bill 129, Fish and Game Offenses, Licenses, and Penalties, sponsored by the House Rules Committee by request of the Governor. I would note that we are not planning to meet on Friday, February 2nd. And with that, we will stand adjourned for the day. It is now 1:51 p.m.